Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, it was quite a day yesterday up on Capitol Hill. We can't even fit all the crazy moments that happened on Capitol Hill in today's Three Martini Lunch, but we're going to do our best. We've certainly got one of them and another one from this morning, plus the op-ed, which everyone's been talking about. But let's start with the good martini. It was yesterday. It was on the House side of Capitol Hill. I believe it was the Energy and Commerce Committee. Jack Dorsey of Twitter and a few other of the social media titans were testifying. And among the topics being discussed were censorship of conservative posts or shadow banning and things like that. Laura Loomer is a person that appears on social media from time to time. She's been described following this story as part of the far right. She did work for Project Veritas at one time. But anyway, she decided to stand up and holler during this hearing and plead for President Trump to do something about how she believes social media is silencing conservatives. And Missouri Republican Congressman Billy Long couldn't hear and just decided to have some fun.
Please help us, Mr. President, before it is too late, because Jack Dorsey is trying to influence the election, to sway the election.
What's she saying? I can't understand her. What?
Steal the election. That is why he is censoring and shadow banning.
I'm at a damn 12 and a half, 15, 7 and a half, $20, 2 and a half, 5 and 7 and a half, 30. Hit $30 down here, 2 and a half, 5, 35, 7 and a half, 40. Hit $40, 2 and a half, 5, 5, 45, 7 and a half, 50.
This continued for a good minute, and then it wrapped up like this.
Yeah, but a four. Four and a quarter. Four and a half. We're selling the cell phone there. Four and a quarter. Four and a half. Hit four and a half. We're 75. 505. Five and a quarter. Five and a half. I yield back.
And so he mentioned the cell phone. Loomer, I think, was live streaming as she protested there, Jim. So it is kind of interesting how the protesters in the Senate Judiciary Committee are treated as these Americans exercising their free speech rights. And Loomer's described as a loon. I think the latter description is probably appropriate for all of them. But what do you make of Billy Long turning yet another protest into a kind of a fun moment there?
Well, my understanding is Billy Long was a professional auctioneer.
Yes.
You don't just get those skills. Those skills are worthy of the guy who was in the FedEx commercials, the Micro Machine commercials. I can't wait until he drops his next rap album. If Ms. Loomis really is that upset about what Facebook and Twitter and social media are doing, and she wants President Trump to do something about it, why is she shouting at a House hearing? It's 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, ma'am. It's right down there. This is kind of basic civics. I didn't realize that she was live streaming. This is why it's the corner today I wrote about. Is it time to no longer permit public seating at high profile hearings? And I don't like that thought, but we now are up to, I believe, 143 interruptions of the Kavanaugh hearings over 2 days. And this is, look, there's business to be done here. Even if you think these hearings are showboating or stuff like that, it's not an event for average Joes to just show up and yell. The people's business needs to be done here. And of course, if you do so, you are disrupting the proceedings. You are committing a crime. The U.S. Capitol Police can throw you out. Yes, you usually don't get charged with much of a crime. And oh, by the way, maybe it's time to start giving more serious consequences to these sorts of things. Make these people clearly. There's not sufficient disincentive for these protesters to do this. And it really has become to a point where it's become already there's a bit of a circus atmosphere, and maybe having at least we have the enjoyable circus atmosphere of an auctioneer congressman. The fact that she was apparently live streaming. I mean, now we've got people attempting to use congressional hearings as ways to promote themselves on social media, which seems like a great irony for a hearing that's supposed to be about social media and repression of voices. Just baffling and frustrating. I really feel like there's been a breakdown in just the basic decorum and everybody knowing their role. Whether or not you like what is happening in a congressional hearing or a congressional markup or anything like that, it's not your job or role to disrupt it, right? If you don't like what they're doing, elect them. If you want to vote him out of office, go vote him out of office. We have ways of dealing with this sort of thing. And you have freedom of speech, but your freedom of speech does not amount to a heckler's veto.
So kudos to Congressman Long. Maybe we need to see more of this. Maybe we need to have at least one auctioneer at every single one of these hearings, Greg. Kind of in case of emergency, just start, you know, auctioneering, let everyone laugh, and no one hears the protester. Kind of like the way, you know, at the political convention, sometimes protesters will get in, start shouting. The instructions to the crowd, at least in the pre-Trump era, maybe the pre-Trump era, they say knock the hell out of them or something. But the instructions traditionally were just applaud, just drown out their shouting with applause while security SDO takes the person out or something like that. I've been to lots of Democratic events. I've been to lots of left-wing events. It would just never cross my mind to stand up and attempt to disrupt the proceedings. Because one, you're not going to succeed. It's not like they're going to say, oh, well, I guess we can't confirm Kavanaugh because somebody shouted. You know, you're not actually changing anything. And no one came there to see you. You're not the point of the of what's going on there. You know, this is our system of government. So as you can tell, Greg, this really kind of gets under my skin. Kudos to Long for at least giving this disruptor a taste of her own medicine.
Jim, correct me if I'm wrong here, because you've covered Capitol Hill in the past, and I'm not sure as well as you do about how this works. But don't the people from the public who show up at these things have to get their tickets through specific offices? Don't various members of the committee, for example, have a certain number of tickets they can give out that allow people access? So if you're handing out tickets to Code Pink or whoever these people are, and they constantly disrupt, maybe not allowing those people to give out tickets anymore would be the way to go.
Yeah, it's different for different hearings. A lot of them are first come, first served. Sometimes you got to stand online. And for a little while, there was this strange little business of hiring people to stay, you know, get there at like, you know, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., or as soon as the building opens, getting online at the hearing room and holding the place in line for some other person. If it was starting at 9, you could show up at 8:50, take your place in there, or whatever, you know, you can get there much later, and you wouldn't have to spend hours waiting online. And I guess you could say this is a good example of a congressional job program, Greg. but you basically, you know, that was how it often would work. I think, you know, obviously there's very limited, you know, also there's, you know, keep in mind, there are usually only, you know, a handful of hearings and events going on a year that actually warrant the interest of any protesters at all. So when people say, oh, would, you know, this would not take much to limit, you know, to block this off. Most people don't pay attention to them. But if you have the sort of thing where you're going to likely to have a great deal of press attention, a great deal of controversy, maybe you don't allow the public in there just so that the people's business can get done.
All right, let's move on to our bad martini now. And yesterday, we were all a Twitter, pun intended, as we learned about the New York Times publishing an anonymous op-ed from a senior official in the Trump administration, which narrows it down to a few hundred people who can go by the title of senior official. This person claims that they are not part of the popular resistance of the left. He says, we want the administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous, but they say that the root of the problem is the president's amorality. Anyone who works with him knows he is not moored to any discernible first principles that guide his decision making. And basically, this person and their allies are spending all of their time trying to stop Trump from doing disastrous things and helping him walk back rash decisions and so forth. Saying meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back. There's literally no telling whether he might change his mind from one minute to the next. There's talk in here about whispers among cabinet officials about invoking the 25th Amendment early on in the administration. There's a couple different paragraphs saluting John McCain, which I'm sure added to the president's blood pressure level yesterday. And ultimately, they say there's a quiet resistance within the administration of people choosing to put country first, but the real difference will be made by everyday citizens rising above politics, reaching across the aisle, and resolving to shed the labels in favor of a single one, Americans. And so the big guessing game going on here in Washington is obviously who the author is here. Jim, this is the bad martini, at least from my perspective, for two reasons. Number one, if any significant portion of this is true, it paints a very unflattering picture and troubling picture of what's going on in the West Wing. And secondly, if this person is supposedly helping to steer the president back onto the right track, why would you go public and let them know that while you're trying to do that?
Yeah, this is one of the things that makes it different from the anecdotes in the Woodward book. And look, we've just had too many people go through
this White House. They describe a president, which I would argue isn't that different from the president we see not behind closed doors, on both on Twitter and in terms of his public appearances. We know Trump has a temper. We know he likes to shout. We know he fumes about slights and perceived insults and anyone who's seen as disloyal. That's this is kind of the guy everybody saw. Some of us disagreed very strongly during the Republican primary and were unenthused about the general election. And, you know, this is what you signed on for, America. You buy the ticket, you take the ride. The idea, though, I think what's really bothersome about it is it lets you – now, let's point out, every staff tries to steer the president in the direction they want, right? This happened in the Obama administration, the Bush administration. I don't know if you necessarily get anything quite on the level of Bannon versus Kushner in previous administrations and the utter loathing. But, you know, look, I mean, Colin Powell and Donald Rumsfeld really disagreed with each other really strongly throughout the Bush years. Clinton, Bush, you know. So this is it, on the one hand, seeing people in the administration say, ah, the president can't do this. We're going to do everything we can to steer him away from it. That in of itself isn't all that shocking or surprising or unusual. The fairly clear contempt that the writer has for the president does seem kind of strange and new. In today's Morning Jolt, I put out my theory about who I think fits. From reading it, you can discern certain factors about the writer. And I have one figure in the administration who I think fits that criteria better than everyone else, but I don't know it for certain. So go click through and read it today. The first rule of Secret Insubordination Club, Greg, is you don't talk about Secret Insubordination Club. It's a lot like Fight Club. If you're having a secret effort to alter the decision-making of the president without him knowing it, Greg, you probably don't want to write that in a New York Times op-ed. That seems like a good way to make sure that he actually would see it and then get really angry and then get really paranoid and maybe even lash out and maybe, you know, even further disregard the advice of his staff or recommendation. What I don't quite get, Greg, and I put this yesterday, and a lot of people seem to concur with this assessment. This is a very strange president where he's clearly enough of a menace, enough of a threat, enough of a problem that you have to act against him behind his back. You have to be insubordinate. You have to secretly work behind the scenes to make sure that his true policy preferences don't come to fruition, Greg. But he's not so bad that you have to resign. I'm not giving up my job, you know. it's this very weird, very precise level of constitutional menace. That would not require the writer of this op-ed to resign and say publicly, this is what I saw when I was working in this administration. This is why it's a disaster for the American people. And I presume Congress must impeach him. I mean, I think this way, this sounds like someone who thinks this is going to be seen as a very ugly chapter in American history. And that he wants to disassociate himself from this as much as possible. And when it all comes out in the wash, he's going to say, look, I did my best to try to stop it behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So do you think, I mean, there's been some speculation, Huffington Post was out there thinking it was Mike Pence. I don't think Mike Pence is anywhere close to that devious. Some people were secretly hoping it was Jeff Sessions. To steal a name from your lexicon, I have a feeling it's going to be an Irving Schmidlap type that most people haven't heard of, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, entirely possible. Let's just say, again, I don't want to specifically say this in case I've got it wrong. Like I said, go read it in the Jolt. But let's just say I think we'll be seeing a lot of hunts for a man.
It might be great. Translated into
going on after this. You know, I'm sure everybody's been looking in Washington, but what if the writer's not in Washington? So the writer clearly is a traditional Republican, seems very plugged in on what the decision making is and the debate is within the administration is on Russia. Sounds like they were there, if not from the beginning, then for a while. Doesn't sound like somebody like somebody was saying, oh, this could be Kellyanne Conway. And I just don't. Once you've signed on, I don't know if you necessarily would, you know, this doesn't sound like the style of a lot of people. I'm sure, you know, we've heard the anecdotes. I'm sure there have been times Defense Secretary Mattis has disagreed strongly with the president. I just don't see a guy named Mad Dog, you know, writing an anonymous op-ed in the New York Times op-ed page. It just doesn't, you know, seem to fit. So you go down the criteria. U.S. Ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman, struck me as the guy. And he seems like the guy who's most surprised. Like, as I wrote that, some people are like, wait, Huntsman works for Trump? Yes.
Yes.
And he's since fall 2017. And people, you know, may forget, he was in the original discussions to be Secretary of State during the transition. I think he'd be in a position to hear those sorts of rumors about the 25th Amendment and stuff like that. So
Anyway, that's my guess. Who knows? I have not seen an official denial from him yet, but, you know, people could doubt that. But again, I don't think this really helps. Like, if you really want to secretly influence the president, then secretly influence the president. Don't announce it in the, you know, the one paper we know Trump always reads.
Well, if the New York Times ever reveals that the original version of the column was in Mandarin, then we'll know you're right for sure.
Just one last thing. So the closing line of the op-ed is, the real difference will be made by everyday citizens rising above politics, reaching across the aisle, and resolving to shed the labels in favor of a single one, America.
No labels.
Don Huntsman was part of the organization entitled No Labels. And a couple years ago, he wrote a book, 2014, after his presidential campaign, entitled No Labels, A Shared Vision for a Stronger America. Doesn't prove anything, but just, you know, as the old song goes, Greg, things that make you say, hmm.
Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. All right, on to the crazy martini now, and let's go to something that just happened this very morning in the third day of Supreme Court confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh before the questioning picked up again with 20-minute questioning sessions today. The members of the committee got into a big fight over something that erupted yesterday, later in the day, and that was the questioning of Brett Kavanaugh over documents that were not made public or even made available to him. Basically, what happened here is all the judicial papers from Brett Kavanaugh came out, but his time in the Bush administration, that's under the Presidential Review Act, and so folks have to go over that and decide what is confidential, what is not, what can be released to the senators, what can be released to the public, and so forth. And so the Democrats are chopping at the bit, probably using it as a distraction because they don't have anything substantive to go after Kavanaugh on, to say that Chuck Grassley is running an unfair process here, that this should be a bipartisan process to decide what is open in terms of the documents and what is not. But Cory Booker, likely 2020 candidate and Democratic member of the Judiciary Committee, says he is planning to release things that are still labeled confidential, and he is willing to accept the consequences.
Senator Cornyn actually made a very good point. I knowingly violated the rules that were put forth, and I'm told that the committee confidential rules have knowing consequences. And so, sir, I come from a long line, as all of us do as Americans, and understand what that kind of civil disobedience is, and I understand the consequences. So I am right now, before your process is finished, I'm going to release the email about racial profiling. And I understand that the penalty comes with potential ousting from the Senate. And if Senator Cornyn believes that I violated Senate rules, I openly invite and accept the consequences of my team releasing that email right now.
Booker says it's doing it to show that there's nothing all that sensitive in there. And Jim, he's just such a selfless hero, willing to fall on his sword for the sake of transparency. What a guy.
Oh, Greg, just breathe it in. Just wait. Oh, that is good grandstanding, man. That's we've seen a lot of grandstanding over the years. But this, I dare you to throw me out of the Senate so that I can return to New Jersey and Iowa and New Hampshire. I dare you to end my senatorial career in a very dramatic fashion so that I can play a martyr and then immediately get around to doing what I really want to do right now, which is run for president and get a leg up on all of you other losers here in the Senate who have to sit here for the next couple of months and technically do your day jobs while I'm out there running. I dare you, Republican colleagues, throw me out. This is almost a circumstance to use the Will Ferrell gif. I'm not even mad. I'm just so surprised. I'm so stunned. This is actually kind of impressive, except we're setting a very bad precedent here. And the very bad precedent is senators don't have to honor the word confidential if they don't feel like it. If they think it's important enough, well, by golly, I'm going to openly, proudly break this rule because I don't like the rule. And in fact, I saw somebody else saying that one of the senators had said, I don't see this as a legitimate hearing, so I don't have to honor that. And if that's true, that's a very disturbing kind of rhetoric we're seeing thrown around here, because these senators are just basically saying, I don't like the rules you're having, so I'm going to choose to violate them. Greg, this could get us in real trouble if everybody starts seeing, say, the rules about classified information that way. Insert comment here about how, I guess you could say, the Clinton campaign demonstrated, we don't really think there's that much consequence for mishandling classified information. Now, here's the thing, Greg. If you ever have to turn over something to Congress and you want to keep it confidential, information could be proprietary, it could be sensitive, it could endanger somebody's life, all kinds of stuff like that. Would you turn it over to Congress now? I mean, basically, they've just demonstrated that any senator who decides, oh, it's important enough, I'm going to leak it anyway, even if we agreed to keep it confidential earlier.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
So do you honor a congressional subpoena anymore? I mean, technically, they're supposed to be able to hold you to consequences, although like you can insert a track of Eric Holder laughing here for being held in contempt of Congress and suffering no real consequence despite his refusal to cooperate with the congressional committee. But really, this general sense of why should I ever provide any information to Congress that I don't want to, when they have made clear that they will leak the information or they will share the information in violation of promises that have been made. This is where we're headed. At some point, you're going to see completely people ignoring congressional subpoenas. Google was subpeanaed to appear yesterday at the hearing, didn't do it. I don't think there's many consequences to that. You know, this is how norms start deteriorating. This is how the rules start getting ignored. This is how it turns into, the law of the jungle, so to speak. You know, there used to be this argument, you don't like the rule. You know, if you want to have different rules, well, then by golly, let's go out and just do everything we can to win, to heck with the rules. And this is what we're ending up with. I mean, people are going to argue, well, if the president lies, what's wrong with Booker lying? If the president breaks his promises, what's wrong with Booker breaking his promises? Look, Democrats, do you want to be the same as Trump? do you want to emulate his worst traits, or do you want to be better than his worst traits? I think the simple answer is, right now the answer is whatever it takes to win. I actually think the more appropriate punishment for Cory Booker is not to throw him out of the Senate, Greg. Figure out some way to require him to be in the Senate for the next 2 years. So he can't go out to Iowa, New Hampshire, and all these other places that he clearly is planning on getting to as early as January of next year.
Absolutely. And he's one of three potential presidential candidates on the Democratic side of this committee. Kamala Harris is clearly interested, maybe Amy Klobuchar as well. And so I just get the sense that he thinks Kamala Harris, until this moment, perhaps had the best moment, got the most attention out of this hearing from the liberal base of the party. And so he said, I got to do something here. And this is what it is.
It's going to be really fascinating to watch Booker versus Harris in the next couple of months. This news cycle is only big enough for one of us.
The shadow primary has begun, and there's only about 30 more people left to get in the race. So that's going to be fantastic. Jim, great day as always. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.